This is Powering Michigan's Future. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. The best contractors, the best electricians, period. You'll sit in on a discussion on the Habitat Detroit buildup project happening this week with Dan Guerin of Habitat Detroit. We'll talk about Play Place for Autistic Children with Art Ashley, chairman of NECA contractor Ferndale Electric, and founder Shell Jones. We'll visit with Pat Devlin, secretary treasurer of the Michigan Building and Construction Trades Council, and with Michael Richard, business manager, financial secretary of IBEW Local 58, on the recent AFL-CIO Housing Trust investment in the city of Detroit. Stay tuned for Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. It's Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. In for Ken Rogulski, here's Dick Hakner.
We kick off the program tonight and we welcome Dan Guerin, construction manager for Habitat Detroit. Dan, welcome to the show again.
Dick, thanks for having me back. It's great to hear you again.
Well, thank you so much. And we're so happy to have you and Habitat Detroit back on our show. And Blitz Build is coming. Tell us what's happening this week.
Oh, it is our busiest week of the year. We started off this morning with a bunch of volunteers getting houses ready for prime and paint. And by the end of the week, the goal is to have the interiors of these three homes essentially complete and ready for trade finishes.
Where is this taking place?
We're on the east side of Detroit in the Morningside neighborhood between Mack and Warren Avenue, about six blocks east of Alter Road.
And how many families is this going to affect?
It will directly affect three. We hope it will positively affect a lot more than that, but we're working on three houses this year.
And, of course, it really does affect a lot more than three or whatever number that you're working on because the spillover effect in the neighborhoods is so great.
That's true. These houses are not the only houses that we built or rehabbed on these two blocks. We have, five additional homes that we built new last year and three additional homes that were rehabbed last year. So this is just furthering our effort at neighborhood revitalization on the east side of Detroit.
Dan, what is the overall goal here?
Well, the goal is to strengthen the neighborhood, ultimately, and provide decent homes for hardworking families. In the Morningside neighborhood, over the last 10 years, we've built or rehabbed over 120 homes. And so we're plodding along, doing what we can to help one of Detroit's neighborhoods come back.
How is it that you choose the families that get these homes?
The families go through a pretty stringent application and screening process. The families have to demonstrate to Habitat that they have a need for decent housing. Either the housing they're living in now is unsuitable, is overcrowded, unsafe, that kind of thing. That they can pay anywhere between a 22 to 30-year interest-free mortgage, and that they can partner with us, that they can put in sweat equity hours, take homeowner education and financial literacy training classes. And that's the formula for being a successful Habitat family.
So you're helping people, but this is not a total giveaway, is it?
No, I'm glad you asked that question, and it's a common misperception. Habitat does not give away homes. Our families work very, very hard to get these houses. It really takes a lot of dedication because almost all of our families have folks who are either working and going to school or working two jobs to try to provide for their families. And so putting in the sweat equity hours either on their home or someone else's house or at one of our resale stores is very difficult. It's difficult to find that time. And so there has to be a lot of buy-in and it's a total commitment on the part of the family.
Not only are they committing to work towards getting a good place to live, but you also mentioned here what else they're learning. They're learning really good habits that they'll keep for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. We encourage our families to be able to save money so that they can do what they need with it. And it's not the kind of thing where they have to decide between paying the mortgage, paying the light bill, and buying groceries for the month. So The educational part of Habitat for Humanity is designed to help everybody make good financial choices and be able to save money for the future.
Dan Guerin of Habitat Detroit, how do people volunteer, the people who go out and they want to help?
I'm glad you asked that question because we always need more volunteers. And the easiest way to do that is to visit our website, which is www.habitatdetroit.org. And on that website, there's a tab for volunteering. Once you register on our website, you'll see a calendar that shows you all of the work opportunities, the volunteer opportunities, and you can sign up for any day that you have available. We typically work Wednesday through Saturday with volunteers, but this week is a little different. We're working Monday through Saturday this week, and we've got a lot to do.
Do you have a lot of repeat helpers?
We asked everyone to raise hands this morning, and I would estimate about 70% of the folks here today have been on a Habitat site before. So that's really exciting.
That's amazing. Obviously, they get a lot out of this, too. Dan, you work with a lot of sponsors because materials have to be donated, the expertise of the people have to be donated, and, of course, funding. Tell us about the importance of these people.
Well, the partnerships that we have with both national and local sponsors makes it much easier to provide these homes and to get them completed. So there are national partnerships with companies like Whirlpool and Dow that donate materials to help get the houses built. And then there are local partnerships with companies that donate labor and materials to help us finish the houses, too.
How do you find these sponsors?
Well, some sponsors come to us. They want their employees to spend time on site working with Habitat as part of a team building exercise or as part of a community service program. And so that's one way that we find volunteers and sponsors. But we also do outreach, too. And we're always looking for more organizations that would like to partner with us.
Dan Guerin, the construction manager for Habitat Detroit. Dan, it's been a pleasure to talk with you about this most recent brand new project on Detroit's east side for Detroit Habitat. And in a moment, we're going to talk more with a real major sponsor of what is going on. So we appreciate you being on our show tonight, Dan.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Stay tuned for more of Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Powering Michigan's Future on WJR. Once again, Dick Hafner.
We continue our conversation tonight with an update on the progress being made at the Play Place for Autistic Children. We welcome Art Ashley with NECA contractor Ferndale Electric and Shell Jones, founder of Play Place. Art, before we get into the details of Play Place, we were talking with Dan Guerin of Habitat Detroit about the Blitz build that's underway, and he mentioned the strategic and great importance of NECA and the IBEW Local 58 in the Habitat Blitz build. So your efforts don't go unappreciated, do they?
Not at all. We're happy to lend support to the Habitat project again this year. I believe this is our 15th year of involvement for NECA and the IBEW. This year we have Superior Electric, Motor City Electric, and my company, Ferndale Electric, that are involved. We're donating materials and helping to obtain electrical permits and that, and taking care of the electrical inspections and that for the project. And it's a good, worthy investment in people's lives. And you know, we believe strongly in the mission that Habitat is involved in. And I believe we've been involved now in about 100 homes over the last 15 years. We love the approach and the philosophy of Habitat, and we've seen directly how this has changed lives, and getting to know some of the people that are receiving, getting the benefit of these houses and receiving them and meeting them and working with them has been very fun, and it really makes you feel good when you can see their enthusiasm about it.
Well, your Ferndale Electric has been active in this for quite a number of years, 15 years, and with all the time and the materials that you have donated over the years, this is quite an investment that you have made in habitat for all of these families.
Yes, it is. And again, you know, we believe strongly in what Habitat is doing, and I look forward every year to getting a call from Dan and getting the dates and the locations we're going to be involved in. And it's people in my staff are even asking months before the build, you know, what are we going to be doing this year? How many houses? Where's it at? And it's exciting. It really is exciting.
Isn't it satisfying to be able to meet with those families and those kids when they see their house?
Yes, it is, and especially when they're out there working side by side with us, and seeing the excitement that they have about it and their enthusiasm. It just gives you goosebumps.
And you're also a supporter of Play Place, and Shell Jones of Play Place for Autistic Children joins us now. And Shell, you're making a return appearance. We met with you some months ago for an overview of your vision for a Play Place for Autistic Children, and now you've had a grand opening. Tell us all about it.
I did. Thank you. So we had our grand opening August 1st. It was sponsored by the Napa Auto Care and their business development group, and it was a wonderful time to be had. We were able to finally share our vision and, you know, connect with lots and lots of families that are affected not only by special needs, by autism, but special needs as well. So it was a wonderful experience, and I was glad to be able to finally share this vision.
What is Play Place for those of us who don't know and haven't seen it?
Okay, so Play Place is basically a community, if you will, that embraces families that are affected by autism and other special needs to give them that, restore those orphaned opportunities of normalcy, like going to the movies or that Friday night out with the family, spending quality time together. It's a family setting as opposed to a space that only deals with the affected individuals. And it's play-themed so that we're basically feeding them their vegetables without telling them that it's broccoli, if you will. Everything about the center has some type of therapeutic or educational component to every piece of equipment and projects that we offer, from a haircut hut to the Lego castle where they are using their fine motor skills to put the pieces together. It's color matching. It's the seating throughout the entire facility is usually either U-shaped or circular to promote communication and socialization. We have an art studio where, again, there's creativity and socialization. We have a bistro for the parents to enjoy that Me Too conversation. Just a plethora of fun-themed things for these families to enjoy.
Doing a lot of normal, everyday things without a stigma.
Exactly. No one has to be judged or made to feel uncomfortable at Play Place.
Where is it located?
So we are in Sterling Heights at 18 Mile and Mound on the northwest corner.
And why is it so important for these families and these folks that are involved there?
Well, basically, there is no place for these families to go without receiving those stares and whispers. You know, oftentimes neurotypical developing children have, let's say, extracurricular activities on the weekend or in the evening where there are no programs that will facilitate something of that sort for a child that has special needs, except for maybe, let's say, the Special Olympics that occur maybe once or twice a year, whereas Play Place accommodates that situation with daily activities and programming that gives these children something to do outside of school and the biomedical regimens and things of that sort.
Since you've recently had a grand opening, I would imagine that there's room for more people to be involved.
Oh, yes, most definitely. It doesn't stop there, you know. And I'd really like to say thank you to some of our huge, huge supporters like NAPA and IBEW 58, NECA, Ferndale Electric, Art. Thank you, guys, because they have helped us hurdle something huge. And, you know, there are still some things that PlayPlace is in need of, and we have a wish list on our website located at autisticplayplace.org. And, of course, donations are always accepted, as we still have to get through operations and things of that sort, and being a nonprofit, that's always a challenge.
Art Ashley is here in our studio. He's got a big smile on his face with NECA contractor Ferndale Electric. And Art, NECA and the IBEW Local 58 have been involved with PlayPlace. What did you guys do to pitch in to help?
Well, our involvement started about a year or so ago, and where I and several others visited the site. We saw a need for that we could get involved with the IBEW. And we first started out by getting electrical drawings put together with the architectural renderings they already had, and submitted those to the city, got plan approval for the electrical. Then we started with donated labor from Local 58 and our apprenticeship school, and along with some of our key foremen, and we started building the electrical system, including ordering, assisting in designing some of the lighting and those type of things, and trying to bring as much value into the project as we could. We, together between the IBEW and NECA, we've donated a little over $200,000 in labor and materials to this project, and we're very happy to see it wrapping up here. I was just out there a couple weeks ago, and it was really fun to see the carpet going down and finish painting and wrapping up, and loose ends being taken care of. And it was something that I think we're all very proud in. And we have members in the IBEW and NECA that have autistic kids, and they're going to have a chance to utilize this facility too. So I think it's really something that's community and is really going to benefit from.
Shell Jones of PlayPlace for Autistic Children and Art Ashley, the NECA contractor Ferndale Electric. Stay tuned for more of Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR.
It's Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's Ken Rogulski.
We kick off tonight's program with Pat Devlin, Secretary Treasurer of the Michigan Building and Constructions Trades Council. Pat, good to have you.
Thank you, Ken.
Pat, in 2015, the AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust announced a big planned investment of $30 million in Detroit for the city to basically fix up the place. So how's it been going? Bring us up to speed on what's been happening.
Well, we're just in the early stages of getting things kicked off. We've identified over 10 properties that have made their way into the Detroit Land Bank. These are homes that are structurally sound. They've done the preliminary inspections on them. They're in great communities, great neighborhoods, supported by school systems, churches, and all that. So
this is a single-family home?
Single-family homes,
so,
yes.
Just like a little bungalow, or just some of these big houses?
Some of these homes that we're looking at are very nice, and they're all over Detroit, so we're not going into one specific area. But we are identifying those neighborhoods that have that one or two house, and to keep the neighborhood strong, we're identifying those houses and going in and refurbishing them.
So what's the big goal of this program?
Number one, to keep that neighborhood and the community strong, and also provide what we think is affordable housing after we're done. The AFL-CIO's plan is to invest close to $75,000 in these homes, and we know we're not going to recoup that. What we're hoping to do is get these homes up and running and sold. There's some incentive programs out there, all wage-based or income-based, if you fit that criteria. There's a program through our partners in this, Southwest Housing Solutions, of up to $15,000 for the down payment. So
wow.
It's all a positive situation.
So is this part of an effort to try and repopulate some some of the city's neighborhoods?
I think repopulate and keep those areas that are strong. We've been working closely with Land Bank, and the mayor's office has really promoted this. I want to praise the efforts of the Southwest Housing Solutions and their team. They've been around a long time and know how to do this, and you know where the targets are. So, and obviously our labor management through MUST and the building trades, their commitment. We went out and formed this partnership. We created a 501c3. We called it, we tagged it with the name of Building Detroit's Future. So it's going to provide opportunities not only for new home owners, but for people that are going to be working on these homes in the community.
So is this basically for a first-time homeowner, or is this for somebody who really wants to, you know, maybe it's time to come back to Detroit?
We're promoting both. You know, the question is who qualifies. Everybody qualifies. It wants to be a homeowner and a taxpayer, and that's what it's all about. Yeah.
If you go through some parts of town, you'll see a person has a house maybe three blocks in from the corner, but yet that person has bought the second, the first, and the third lot next to them, mm-hmm. fenced it in, and made a beautiful side lot. I mean, mm-hmm. some of these homes that have kind of spread out through the neighborhoods are absolutely stunning. It's sort of like a little oasis in the city of Detroit.
Well, I agree. Some of the homes that I've already seen that have been identified for the inventory, the architecture is unbelievable, all brick structures, just the uniqueness of the architecture in the house itself, wood floors,
wow.
plaster.
Plaster.
Yeah,
that's
unbelievable. Yeah, that's a old trade. We still have members that represent that trade, but they say all the good ones have a little silver on that hair, on the top of the head, though. So you know, it's just it was a trade that was really booming back in the 50s, 60s, and maybe late or early 70s.
But, and those houses were built like rocks.
Oh, right? They are. Yeah. Yeah, unbelievable structures.
So. Yeah. So where's the program today?
Right now, we've identified the homes. We're just kicking off our first two homes. The agreement with Land Bank right now is that there'll be no more than 10 in our inventory, and we'll add on to that inventory every time a house is up for sale. We have reached an agreement with a real estate situation in Detroit, and our contractors that will be working on these homes are Detroit-based, along with our workers.
So Detroiters will get a chance to help fix this up and make some money on it.
Most definitely. We're really keying in on that youth. The youth build, the access. Our plan is to, we just did another class with Access for All. We've got people that are available there. And on our board up program that we had over 50 participants in last year, we've got a number of people that still are interested in coming aboard. The house is identified. We've made a commitment on most of these homes to spend anywhere from $65,000 to $80,000. Almost all of them will qualify for electrical upgrade, plumbing. We got to get those up to code. It's going to be masonry cement work to make sure the sidewalks and the porches and all that are intact. And obviously other trades that would be there would be painters and the carpenters.
So who's eligible to apply for a loan for one of these homes?
Anybody is you know.
Seriously?
We had looked at it originally of keeping it, seeing it was AFL-CIO, just to the union sector of home builders, and we didn't think that was probably, we wanted to open it up. We want, you know, a good story out of this thing that everybody's capable of owning a home. And I can't stress more that subsidy, and we call it Detroit Home Lift Program, and that's run out of Southwest Housing Solution. Again, that is based on, the criteria is based on earning income. That's what they're going to look at. But it's a great incentive for home buyers.
So is this a typical mortgage process you have to go through, or is this something special where they come and say, look, I want to buy this house?
No, it's a typical mortgage. Okay. Realtor is going to be market. We're going to market the home. So,
wow.
Yeah. So a lot of...
Now, when this house is done, when you're done fixing it up, I mean, there's new electrical, new this, new that, new everything. Is this house basically ready for move-in condition? All you do is unpack your stuff in your home? Or do you have to do some work? Do they have to come in and sand the floors, paint the walls, and do other stuff?
Right? No, we were going to have it move-in ready. And what's nice about this, we know the first probably 25 to 50 homes are going to be be a great deal because, again, you know, the housing market hasn't got where it needs to be yet. And by improving these neighborhoods, we're hoping that, you know, that comes along with it, that the longer we go down the road on this, the more we're going to get for these homes. So the first time, you know, the first homes that are going to be turned over for sale are really going to be great. Great deals, I can put it that way.
The first sale coming yet?
Probably within the next month.
That quick?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Any particular area? Is it west side, east
side?
You
know, we've tried to expand it all over the place. We don't want to make any situation think we're favoring one side off the other. So we're east, west, south, north.
Pat, why do you feel like the folks at the AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust, why are they looking to invest in Detroit?
Well, that's a good question. We've had talks on other situations concerning Detroit and their involvement and what they could do. I think they've definitely feel the energy that's going on in Detroit, want to be a part of that. It's interesting that I've gotten a number of calls from around the country asking about what we're doing right here in Detroit.
Did I understand correctly, you can only have 10 homes in the inventory?
Yeah, we don't, you know, that's all a strategy. That's Southwest Solutions and the land bank, and that's done. I understand we don't want the inventory to grow too big and not, you know, be able to sell these homes. You know, this is pension money through the AFL-CIO Housing,
right,
so there is some part of an investment here. But this is, you know, that's our concern, that we don't want to get too big too fast. So, and the more homes we get sold out there, the more we get a potential of up to 300.
But if you start selling homes and your inventory goes down, you can fix more up and
definitely.
Hopefully get
money. Definitely.
Okay. Can you hang around with us?
I sure can.
We got to do a station break.
Okay.
Stay tuned for more of Powering Michigan's Future, only on News Talk 760 WJR Detroit.
It's Powering Michigan's Future on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58. The best contractors, the best electricians, period. Here's Ken Rogulski.
Tonight we've been discussing the AFL-CIO Housing Investment Trust Program, aimed at investing $30 million in the city of Detroit. And now we welcome Michael Richard, Business Manager, Financial Secretary of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 58, to give us an overview of the construction market and the opportunities around that are coming at us. Michael, good to have you.
Great to be here, Ken.
How have you been?
Very good. How you been, my friend?
We've been well. Before you got here, we've been talking about the AFL-CIO's Housing Investment Trust and what's been involved in the program. So what do you feel like that this thing brings to the city of Detroit?
Well, first off, I mean, it's a great source of pride knowing that organized labor is invested in the recovery of Detroit. Then, of course, it creates job opportunities in that single-family home market and allows us to bring in some young men and women from around the surrounding communities to do work on projects that we typically don't do.
So it kills like two birds with one stone. One, you're giving somebody a trade, you know, an education to a trade. And secondly, you're fixing up the city.
Absolutely. And those are good quality-built homes. And it's a great... It's great to be part of that, taking those homes and putting them back in the great condition and moving some families back in. It's a win-win all around.
Well, let's talk about that construction market for a second. What are you seeing today looking out over the next few years for this kind of program to take effect?
Well, right now we've got a slow and steady increase in our market, which is good. We like slow and steady. And, you know, if everything stays on track, we're looking at that slow and steady increase over the next several years. So hopefully that puts us in a position not only to get all our members back out to applying their trade and back to work, but also giving us opportunities to bring some new folks in.
So why is a slow and steady growth more important to you than rather a fast and tumultuous sprout up like a mushroom?
Well, I'd like a little bit of consistency, and a lot of times in our market, in our industry, we don't get that. It is the ups and downs, and a lot of things are out of our control. So typically, if we can get a nice, slow, steady increase over a long period of time, that's good.
I hear you. And has Michigan technically recovered from the recession of 2009?
Well, from my perspective, I think we're certainly getting better, but I don't really put us in that column of being out of recession. I think we're lagging behind the rest of the country, and I think that's due in large part to the main industries in the state. And so, certainly in the construction industry, we always go into that down cycle first, and we come out of it last. So we're creeping up there, Ken, but we're not quite out of it yet.
First to come, last to get out of it, huh?
Unfortunately.
Are you at full employment yet?
No, we're getting there. I got a couple hundred members on the bench waiting to get back to work, and I certainly anticipate over the next month or two that we get them folks back into the job world.
Okay. Michael, we have one of your friends here, Pat Devlin. Pat, have we seen some big numbers yet? Are the construction-related jobs in Detroit, how many boots you got on the ground? How many bodies you got working out there right now?
Well, like Mike said, we're not at full employment. Some trades are, but you know it's short-lived. That's as a result of shutdowns, whether it's Marathon or Ford or Chrysler or GM have their short-term turnarounds. Those are those spikes that you need a lot of manpower, but for a very short period of time, then they come back to the halls and are still waiting for opportunities. So Mike hit it on the nail on the head when he talked about we like to see that slow,
so you're with him. So, slow and steady is better than fast and furious.
Yeah, and we're getting the things have picked up. The opportunities are there. I think some trades are going to be back to the table, full employment before others. And that's just the nature of the industry.
So you're optimistic about the future, though.
Yeah. I think, you know, this industry is so hard to feed on the front end. And I compare back when, you know, things were going good before the downturn. We had Comerica Park going, Ford Field. We had the McNamara Terminal. It was a couple hundred square feet short of a mile. We had K through 12 going crazy. We had higher learning, U of M, MSU, all the big colleges were doing their stuff. Probably had about 700 travelers from other states to help us out for a very short term. All that work, it probably was close to $50 billion worth of work, was completed start to finish in 28 months.
So that's all?
That's all.
All of that was done in 28 months?
So it shows you what we need to really go out on a steady line of saying, you know, for the next 10 years, we're going to have steady employment.
Now I understand slow and steady.
Yeah.
Michael, what are the opportunities for the City of Detroit residents and others to begin a career in the construction trade because of this program?
Well, you know, Ken, like most industries, we have a lot of our members that the remaining group of the baby boomers that are going to be retiring here pretty quick. And so we have we're going to need to fill those gaps, and we're always looking for good quality qualified candidates to fill those vacancies, and you know that's going to create a lot of good opportunities. And we've certainly ramped up our efforts in the recruitment and in the city, and hopefully that we keep trending up the way we have, and we're getting some really good quality candidates out of the City of Detroit.
You know, when you're a young kid trying to get your feet started in some kind of career, you're looking around, what do I want to do when I grow up? This has got to be an excellent opportunity for any young person who's not afraid to work, who's got skill in their hands, and who's got a mind on his shoulders, to make a very, very fulfilling life.
Absolutely, and that's the one thing we've been trying to do is get to them a little bit earlier than we have in the past, and try to get to them in that 9th, 10th grade range, and just make them aware of the career opportunities that we have, that we're out there, and these are good. They're not jobs, they're careers, and they're careers with good benefits and great retirement opportunities.
When you get young people out there involved in these projects, do they get involved with a foreman or a journeyman who basically, you know, stands over their shoulder and shows them how to do the job right and, you know, uses his experience to help them learn and how to be a better craftsman?
That's the key to what we do, Ken, and we've been doing it for over 100 years. It's that journeyman-apprentice relationship is key to passing down the knowledge in our trade. I mean, there's a lot of the technical stuff that they'll get in that classroom, and our industry is always evolving, certainly on the electrical side of the construction. So the classroom is important, but really learning the trade and the skill sets that it takes to be a good, competent electrician or technician on the sound and communication side, That's passed down from the journeyman to the apprentice. It's a great model, one that served us very well.
Yeah, hands-on is so important. As developers are planning projects in the market, there has been some conversation about community benefit agreements. Now, explain these and what you hope to accomplish with them.
Well, Ken, we certainly support the concept of the community benefit agreements. And, you know, really the basic concept is the hope to create the job and career opportunities for the people that are living in the communities where all the development is going on. And specifically in the city, we're talking about a really underrepresented population in the workforce. So it's important to have something, some of those things put together. But just as important is making sure that we have the right people at the table putting those agreements together to make sure we get it done right, and there's something that's going to not only serve the young men and women in the community well, but also serve the industries that we hope to attract and bring into the city.
Mm-hmm. Pat, in your opinion, who needs to be at the table when you start talking about things like community benefit agreements so that they work, that they work as intended?
Well, these community benefits agreements are set up, they're pro-growth, and we've always said a successful one always has labor, especially the building trades, at the table to discuss. Because when developers come in and develop, there's going to be job opportunities in our industries, in our industry with our affiliates. So very, very on point to the fact that any time a community benefits agreement is put together, that labor needs to be there with their voice. One unfortunate thing, this past couple of years, the legislature has taken measures to outlaw or make PLAs, project labor agreements, unlawful on public acts. And our PLAs were always tied in with community benefits. They were basically a community benefit agreement anyway. So our concern is now the supplement to PLAs is going to be the community benefits. So they're even more important to us now.
Michael, we got 60 seconds left. As you look ahead over the next few years, how do you feel the market's going to be for your industry and your members?
Well, like I said early on, Ken, things are certainly looking good, and if we can stay on track and we can get some good legislation passed. I know we're working hard on an energy bill, and hopefully we can get that done because that's going to equate to some investment and some job opportunities for our members. So certainly over the next 5 to 10 years, if we can keep this steady, slow progression going, that's the best thing we can hope for, and that's getting my members back to work and full-time and getting them back in, building up their benefits and working towards that retirement that everybody wants and deserves.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. This has been Powering Michigan's Future, sponsored by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 58 and the National Electrical Contractors Association of Southeastern Michigan on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Ken Bergulski. Thanks for joining us.